Welcome to the show, friends and neighbors. We are going to start today on a very down note, but we promise we will get to a good note by the end of today's episode. Here's the downside. World War II was the most dangerous, deadliest military conflict in human history in absolute terms of people that died. Over 60 million people were killed, and that was about 3% of the world population at the time.
That sucks.
That's terrible. But that is the context in which we find today's very strange story. I'm Ben.
You are indeed, Ben. Mm-hmm. And I am a very chilled out Noel.
You're very chilled today?
I'm very chilled today. I'm feeling very chill. And I just want to say props to Robert Evans from Behind the Bastards, who put this phrase in my head, chock full of Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Slash, it terrifies me.
He has used it in the past before.
Has he really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's got a way with words. He wrote for crack.com for a very long time, too. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Robert Evans, but I'm also, and I think you can get with me on this one, I'm also a big fan of super producer Casey Pegram.
And super producer Casey Pegram is a huge fan of military history.
Is that true, Casey?
No, it's not true.
Casey on the case.
I'm off the case on this one, guys. Turning in my badge.
I'll tell you what you're going to be on soon, my man, is a t-shirt.
Oh, that's true. Oh.
Uh-huh. You're going to be wearing a robe and pounding a gavel, and you're going to have a disapproving look on your face.
Well, I think, when we had talked about this off air, Casey, you were pretty excited about a Law and Order-esque type t-shirt.
Yeah, if we don't get sued to oblivion for doing it.
Nah, it's fine, man. It's fine. It's fair use. You can get that shirt when it eventually becomes a thing at tpublic.com/ridiculous history. Just putting that out there at the top.
Yes, that's true for anyone who tossed some ideas our way in our community page, Ridiculous Historians. We do want to confirm that was not just idle chatter and Facebook commentary I was throwing at you. We have indeed gotten together and started making some t-shirts. We even have one just for the Quister, and we'd love to talk Casey into being the inspiration for some t-shirt art. So let us know what your ideas are.
Oh, no, it's happening, my friend. It's happening.
And if you're listening to something in today's episode and you hear a turn of phrase or a particular image pops in your mind that you think would be a good idea for a t-shirt, do not hesitate. Let us know.
Can't believe chock full of Nazis is already a thing. It's so good.
Is it just the assonance or what is it?
Well, no, there's the coffee brand called Chock Full of Nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say chock full of Nazis, that's what I picture is like a can of coffee with like swastikas on it.
Oh, I see levels.
We're not entirely BSing here. The Nazis do come into play in today's story, but that's not where it begins.
No.
It begins in Manchuria.
That's right, Noel. It begins in Manchuria in 1938. There's a young man whose name we were probably not going to pronounce correctly, spoiler alert, because we are not Korean. His name is Yang Kyung-jong.
He's a solid man.
We'll see. He was 18 years old in Manchuria, and he was conscripted by the Imperial Japanese Army to fight against the Soviet Union.
Yeah, in this little known, at least to me, and mm-hmm. I think you were maybe tangentially aware of it, but a conflict called a couple of different things. Mm-hmm. The Russians referred to it as the Battle of Khalkhin Gol, and then the Japanese side referred to it as something else.
The Nomonhan Incident.
There you go.
Yeah.
What was the incident? What was the beef?
Well, first, I want to point out that the Battle of Khalkhin Gol sounds like a spinoff of a Tolkien book. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like something from Dune.
Mm-hmm. And that's why, for the title alone, I'm going with the Russian side on this one. But it was a series of conflicts, as you said, that were undeclared between the Soviet and Japanese forces due entirely to disagreements about borders. And they were fought along the Soviet Union, Mongolia, Japan, and Manchukuo. From like across the year in 1939. And this mainly happened because these two forces were attempting to expand their territory and their reach. The Japanese forces maintained that the border between Manchukuo and Mongolia was this river, the Khalkhin Gol, or in English, the Khalkha River, which flows into Lake Bir. But the Mongolians, who were allied with the Soviet forces, said that the border was actually 16 kilometers or almost 10 miles east of the river, just east of the Nomon Han village.
And this wasn't just a little scrap, my friend. Upwards of 50,000 men, or as Cotton Flynn would say, 50,000 men were killed. Mm-hmm. No small potatoes, man. But you know who wasn't killed is the hero. I'm going to call him the hero because I think he's a total hero.
He's the protagonist for sure.
Yeah, he was not killed, thankfully. He was, in fact, captured by the Russians and sent to a labor camp. And then he was drafted into the Russian army.
And there are two reasons for this. So when he was originally conscripted by the Imperial Japanese Army, he became part of a pretty hardcore fighting force called the Kwantung Army. This was the largest and most prestigious command in the Japanese Army. So he already had some experience, right, as a unwilling soldier. And the second factor that led to his conscription again, his second conscription, was that the Soviet Union had a terrible, terrible, terrible problem with manpower.
Yeah, they were short-staffed.
Yeah, that barely even begins to cover it. They were so desperate, in fact, that they were taking anyone, you know? So they conscripted this guy. Do you want to stay in a gulag or do you want to fight for the glory of Mother Russia?
Yeah, sure. Easy.
Easy call. Have you ever been in a gulag?
Doesn't sound nice.
Yeah, you get it. So they were forcing anyone they could find to join up with the Soviet military. And Young does this for, what, about a year, Noel, right?
Mm-hmm. Because, you see, this was right on the cusp of a little scrap we like to call World War II. In a previous episode, we talked about the Nazis' use of soccer, American soccer, mm-hmm. football, as a propaganda tool. Mm-hmm. We talked about this idea of appeasement and how the Allies kind of kept letting Hitler do his thing. Letting him do this thing, he's going to be fine, he's going to chill out. Finally, he invades Poland, and that's just a bridge too far. And then here we are.
Right, because here in the Pacific and Eurasian theater, even before the war is breaking out, we see these tensions, these undeclared conflicts ratcheting up, and Yang is caught in the middle of it. So just to keep track, he was not Japanese, but he got drafted to the Japanese army, he got captured, and then he got drafted to the Russian army. And he, in 1942, he was fighting in what they called the Red Army. He was sent to the Eastern Front of Europe. He was there for a year. But then in 1943, during the Third Battle of Kharkov, he gets captured by Wehrmacht soldiers, by German soldiers.
Yeah, that's right. They were called the Ost Battalion, which means East Battalion. Mm-hmm. Great article on not the most creative website name, but rarehistoricalphotos.com has more than a photo. It's got a real nice photo of who we think this young man was. And it's very intense because he just has a real hangdog look on his face.
And he's so young.
He's so young. And the kid next to him looks even younger. He looks like he's like 15. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. So, but yeah, there's some good information on this site. I recommend checking it out. It's just called Young Kyung Jong, the only known soldier to have fought on three sides of a war in 1944.
Spoilers.
Right. What side was next? What side came next, Ben?
So after he is captured by the German side, they apparently don't bother with asking him how he came to end up fighting in Ukraine for the Soviets, right? It's very likely that had circumstances been different, he would have been executed, right? Because the Nazis at this time were not in the habit of allowing prisoners to volunteer to serve in the army.
Yeah, didn't you? Weren't they down with that whole white supremacist master race thing?
Mm-hmm.
And they want to keep it pure?
Well, at this point in the conflict, they were willing to take almost anyone who would throw in for the cause. just another body to put in front of the bullets, you know?
But they weren't like, they weren't getting their asses handed to them at this point. Yeah, this is just the beginning of the war. They were still quite strong.
Right, but an experienced soldier is still an asset.
That's true.
And so because they had fallen into the habit of allowing, again, air quotes, allowing people to, air quotes, volunteer for this, Yang was conscripted to fight in that East Battalion, or how do you say it, Noel?
Ost Battalion.
Perfect. Thank you, man. In the 709 Infantry Division of the Wehrmacht. And these battalions were small groups of men that were all volunteers, quote-unquote, volunteers from the different regions of Europe that the Nazi regime controlled. They were folded into larger units of German soldiers to serve as shock troops and backup to more experienced battalions. You can find this right up to on todayifoundout.com by Carl Smallwood.
I've been digging that site.
Yeah, I've been digging it as well. Highly recommended. We don't know who they are. We just think they do fun stuff. So there he is. Now he's in this other army. What happens next?
So now he's going to fight for his Reich to party, huh?
I'll allow it.
Thank you, Ben. You're very kind. In 1944, he gets sent to France, where he's going to join the Wehrmacht's Ost Battalion.
Mm-hmm.
And there are tons of Soviet prisoners, much the same way that he was conscripted by the Japanese. Very similar deal.
Right.
It becomes kind of like slave labor, right? Or like slave soldiers.
Yeah, they're not forcibly saying join or die, maybe, as explicitly. But
seems implied.
But yeah, to quote Dennis Reynolds from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, there's the implication. So we have to admit, it's not as if this kid was just raring to go for war. He was trying to stay alive and had done it successfully. So he goes to this Cotentin Peninsula in France shortly before the Allies attempt to storm the Vichys in an historical event known today as
D-Day.
D-Day. That's right. D-Day, where the Allied troops are storming the beaches at France. You've seen it depicted in so many war films here in the West. Well, it turns out this kid is on the other side, the Axis side, and he's trying to prevent the Allies from storming the beaches.
Yeah, he's defending it on behalf of the Nazis. And he gets captured again.
He gets captured again.
Can I tell you, quick aside,
sure.
Something I learned from todayifoundout.com was that the actor who played Scotty on Star Trek, his name's James Doohan, he was among the Canadian soldiers who stormed the beach at Normandy, and he got shot 6 times. I believe he lost a finger, got shot through the hand, several shots in the leg, and one in the chest that would have ended his life if it hadn't have been for this age-old movie trope. What do you think it was, Ben?
Age-old movie trope.
What saved his life?
Oh, was it a Bible? Was it a flask?
Cigarette case.
It was a cigarette case.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So I just I love that because it's such a trope, and it's a trope because, gosh darn it, it happens.
So the Germans eventually get overrun. This is not all entirely U.S. propaganda. It really does happen. The Germans are eventually getting overrun by the Allies. And this time, Yang is captured again, but this time by the Americans. And
kid can't catch a break.
This kid cannot catch a break.
Or maybe he's catching all the breaks.
It's, you know, it's an interesting question. It's kind of a half full, half empty glass thing, right?
It's a very Forrest Gumpian kind of situation,
he's
too.
He's still alive.
Right. He's alive.
At this point. So that is, I think, probably his number one priority at that point. But there's a wrinkle. There's a problem here. When he's captured, he can't speak German. He can't speak English. The officers who originally found him and captured him, among them, there was Lieutenant Robert Brewer of the 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment, 101st Airborne, and he thought that this guy was a Japanese soldier in a German uniform, and he reported, somewhat puzzled, that the regiment had captured 4 Asian people in German uniform and that no one could talk to them. And so they just sent him to a POW camp in England.
Oh, and I believe they were ethnic Georgians. Isn't that right?
Right. Yeah. That's the current debate, because you could see how someone from the West without experience in this part of the world or these cultures might just quickly categorize them. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And it's like there's only one type of person that I could think of who would be here and looks like this. They must be Japanese. Take them away. Book them, Dano.
Oh, I actually have it here as that they were from Turkestan.
Turkestan. Okay. Yeah, so yeah. Still in Eurasia. Because uh-huh. I found that they were from Georgian descent.
Interesting. Yeah. This is kind of a murky story. It's a lot of hearsay, and not much is known about this young man's life prior to being conscripted into the Japanese army.
Very little.
But what is known is that he didn't stick around after the war ended. He didn't go back home either. He went to America.
Yeah, he was transferred to a prison camp in the U.S. and then he was released from captivity in 1947, and he said, you know what? I'm going to stay here.
Yeah, land of opportunity and all that.
Mm-hmm. He moved to Illinois and lived there.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's where—
Cook County, right?
Yeah.
Which is that Chicago area?
Yeah, Chicago area. And again, I don't know if you found anything on this, but I found that his life gets murky again. He sort of falls from the historical record.
Yeah, that's where the story ends, at least as far as rare historical photos is concerned. they say that they found that he quietly passed away in 1992, but there's really not much information about what he did with the rest of his life. But man, you look at the picture of who was supposedly this young dude. He has seen some.
He's got that thousand league stare so common with people who have experienced PTSD or traumatic events. But there's a little bit of a fictional side to this that he would have enjoyed had he gotten the chance to experience it. There was a film made about his journey called My Way in 2011, and it's entirely based on Yang Kyung-jong's, I don't want to say adventures, no. His experience is hopping from one army to another all the way to Illinois. Can you imagine the stories this guy must have?
Nope.
Can you also additionally, could you imagine going to see a movie that was inspired by true events in your life? Would you do it or would you want to skip it?
Like, go see my movie?
Yeah.
I think it'd be cool.
I think it depends on who plays. Like, I would want to know who played me.
Well, I would obviously have final say on that.
I think we have to.
This came up on Movie Crush, the mini crushes that I do with our buddy Chuck from Stuff You Should Know. A listener asked who we would get to play ourselves in our movie. Chuck said he would get Jack Black to play him. Cool. Mm-hmm. I said I want Bradley Cooper to play me, mm-hmm. and I want him to really do some acting, man. You know, mm-hmm. put on some pounds. You know, do the work. Put in the work, Bradley Cooper. I want to see your chops.
That reminds me. Hey, let me know who you would want to play you in a film adaptation of your life or a really interesting story in your life. I always think that's an interesting question. I've never saw anyone. I would just play myself. There's the technology now where I could play the young
man. We don't have the time, man. You got too much going on.
We'll make the time. I'll do it animated.
Well, speaking of making time, why don't we make a little time for some listener mail?
Yes, listener mail. I'm not going to do that voice the whole time, but we do want to say thank you to Aaron, who wrote to us on Facebook and said, wasn't there talk about you guys having some Ridiculous History t-shirts made? Is this actually in the works? And then while we're in the thread, I asked you, if you were on Ridiculous Historians, to suggest some cool t-shirt ideas. And I'd like to just laundry list a few of these. Did you see this?
No, I didn't. Surprise me.
All right. So Aaron says, didn't you guys throw out the idea for a squatched t-shirt using Sasquatch as a verb? I think that's a home run.
You got squatched, son.
Yeah. And then Oliver says, a bear with super dilated pupils holding a honey jar with skull and crossbones for hallucinogenic honey. And then all caps, for sure, Napoleon getting attacked by rabbits.
I love all of these.
These are great. These folks are, you guys are knocking it out of the park. And then we've had people go through and list things that they thought were t-shirt worthy, such as the West Point Eggnog Riot, the Gold Rush Egg War, Harvey Wiley's Poison Squad. The list goes on. So thank you to everybody who wrote in, and please feel free to jump on that thread and give us more of your suggestions.
Hashtag Poison Squad.
Poison Squad.
Okay, I got one here. Subject is, yes, my ears are happy.
I know this one.
Yeah. So our buddy Jacob W. had written to us previously to alert us to the fact that we mispronounced a word that particularly triggered him and sent him into a blind rage. But thankfully, he seems to have chilled out. Portmanteau, pronounced correctly. And I know it was me, Ben. It was me. I said portmanteau. I don't know why. I know how to pronounce it. I just got caught up in the moment.
Oh, you're beating yourself up.
He says, I don't know if it was my pedantry in the message. It was. I sent you all from your site, or if there were more of us bothered by that little detail. Either way, it shows that you do listen. We do. And you're willing to change. We are sometimes. Admirable traits, my boys. That was my interjection, then, my boys. Keep up the good work.
Well, thank you so much for writing in. This concludes our listener mail. But not our show. Tune in for our next episode when we look at the vital role potatoes played in World War II. In the meantime, you can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can summon us at a crossroads at midnight, say our names three times into an unlit mirror.
Now, that's for the other show.
No, I mean, that's how I get around.
Okay, cool. Yeah, you do you, my man. And hey, we totally forgot to give our thankies on the last episode because we were so taken by Robert Evans's glorious extra credit segment. So, there's really nothing we can do about the past, but we are now in the present, at which time we would like to thank super producer Casey Pegram, Alex Williams, who composed our theme,
our researchers Eves Jeffcoat and Christopher Hasiotis, as well, of course, as you. Thanks so much for tuning in, folks.
See you next time.